And welcome to a very special edition of Nitro Beard. It is episode number 10, our double-digit anniversary extravaganza spectacular. I am your host, Mr. Wes Gardner, and I'm here with, of course, the beautiful and delicious Brian Bolita. Say hello, sir.
Hey, what's going on?
And we actually have a special guest with us today from the Platformers.net community, all-around classy gentleman. And a very good friend of ours and friend of the show, Mr. Cody Dunn. Say hello, sir.
Hello.
well played. But I'm excited about this episode because we're gonna get right to business. It's another user mail questionnaire listener feedback madness special. So you know, our first one was a really big success. I think it was episode number 8. It was a lot of fun to answer questions, kind of get to know a little bit of the community. But this one, gonna be better. I'm saying it. I'm definitely saying it because
how will all the people that ask questions in episode 8 feel about that? Well, actually, I guess they've asked questions again, so maybe they feel pretty good.
Right, exactly. Like some of them are repeats, but but the people that have not repeated, this just means they got to up their ante. And for the next user special, they got to ask more questions.
Right, it'll be like a question battle. Everyone's going to try to out-question each other.
And then I just know next, like the episode afterwards, we're going to end up with like quantum physics.
And like, exactly.
And be well, like, oh my god.
I know Ether asked me, the very talented artist, I'm just going to go ahead and, Patrick Bonaducci, I knew him in college, he asked me not to read this question. I'm just going to go ahead and say it now, we don't have to get into it, but it might take quantum physics, but I believe the question, I don't have it up anymore, but I think the question was, how many punches do you think it would take you to destroy the Earth?
Oh man, that's like how many licks does it take to get to the center of the Tootsie Pop?
Right, exactly, except a lot more destructive.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe we'll get into it another one, because that we might need a platformer train here, since he, and maybe MCC, since they know stuff about physics and math and whatnot. But me, I ain't do no math.
I don't know. I'd say, like, 9 punches, but that's clearly wrong. That's kind of undershooting it a little bit.
I guess it depends where on the Earth you're punching.
True. That, like the ground. Okay, wait, before we even. Okay. This first segment, we're getting to the questions in the second segment. But the first segment, well, we're going to talk about what we've been playing and just kind of generally catch up on what we've done during the past week. But Brian, I'll have you go first.
The usual, still playing through, and this will come into play later in one of the questions, still playing Spelunky. Grand Theft Auto 4. Oh, actually, the new thing is Xenoclash, which just came out on Steam, I think on the 21st, just this past Wednesday or Tuesday. Came out the same day as the Left 4 Dead huge, awesome update. I haven't jumped. I just kind of dipped my feet into it because I wanted to wait until I beat Grand Theft Auto 4 before I move on to another single player game. Because that's kind of how I operate. I gotta beat one before I move on to another, and that
right.
way I actually finish my games.
I wish I had a habit,
but it requires discipline.
Yeah, you know, but, which I lack entirely.
10,000 lashes. So is it, from what I've dipped my feet in so far, it's really great. It's a first person game. I'm not going to say shooter. That there is shooting, but a lot of it is brawling, and the brawling feels really good. I mean, it feels incredibly visceral, and the art direction of the game is brilliant. It's this kind of quasi fantasy. I don't even know how I would put it. It's almost like primal steampunkish. Hmm. It's really interesting. If you get a chance to check out a video, but so far so good. So
right.
I can't wait to delve into more. And I just read now that they're apparently planning a DLC for it, as well as releasing map tools and stuff for it. So,
oh wow, good deal. Yeah. See, whenever I was looking at the pictures and stuff, I know there was a lot of hype on a lot of the communities and stuff, but it really looked like it was a. But just from general impressions, I looked at screenshots and I looked at a video, and it reminded me of Turok. Just because I see like these weird dinosaur creatures,
yeah,
and then it's first person, and
they got the kind of the very primal stuff going on. They got you know, huge like dinosaur beasts and you know, bones incorporated into their weapons, and you could make that comparison to some extent, but it's a lot more fantasy-like. Like, I mean,
okay.
when you reel back a super punch, like you reach your arm back and your arm kind of stretches out forward just a little bit. So it's almost comic, like the art direction.
Oh, right. So how many punches would that take to get through the earth?
Okay.
if like a super mega deluxe Xenoclash
super
punch.
Xenoclash punch. one half.
Oh, God.
So yeah, that's the newest thing I've been playing, Xenoclash. That's about it.
Good deal. And we're going to jump to our special guest. Cody, what have you been playing lately? I know this is your first time on the show, but I do want to kind of know what you've been up to lately as far as the video games are concerned.
Well, I have the thing where I don't play on weekdays, but I play on weekends.
Right.
So, last weekend I played, let me think, Resident Evil 4, and Geometry Wars Galaxies, I believe.
Oh nice.
On what systems are you playing Resident Evil 4? On Wii, GameCube?
Wii.
Oh, okay, cool.
How does
I just got to the castle, and wow, that's... That shit is just intense. I wish, like, about Resident Evil 5, you know, how your partner is, like, armed to the teeth and, you know, helps you. I wish they could have done that with Resident Evil 4. Get rid of at least a sword, for
right.
God's sakes. But no, useless. I have to do the work.
Have you seen the there's apparently a glitch using Ashley whenever you have the controller that if you go through a door and like there's an enemy on the other side, whenever you open the door it knocks him back and you can do the vertical suplex.
Right.
That's what I would do to everybody, man.
Leon. Using Ashley? Are you serious?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I'll give you after the show I'll give you a YouTube link cuz it's freaking
That's
hilarious.
Awesome.
But,
awesome! She's not completely useless. Okay, fine.
Cody can't wait to go. You know, he's just like, finally, Ashley's worth something, and he's just going to go around waiting for people to be on the other side of Joe so he can suplex them.
just don't do it in real life. That's my advice. Don't like be outside of Wendy's or something and like try to open the door and start suplexing.
Wait for some guy to walk out with like his cheddar mushroom Swiss burger. Like he opens the door and you just grab him and suplex him.
It's like Baconator. I'll show you Baconator, and then you hit it. That's what happened.
Boom.
Oh man. Oh, but is that all you've really been playing? Is the Geometry Wars in Resident Evil 4?
Yeah, I've stopped playing Brawl because I got to this one part where you had to jump to this. There's this one platform area. Mm-hmm. It's the Link and Yoshi part.
I think I remember that part actually.
And there's this platform. And it's blocked off. You have to hit something to get unblocked, but. Where is the thing to unblock it? I don't understand.
Brawl's actually really bad about that, because I remember I was playing with my old roommate Chad. We just went through the entire emissary mode in like 2 days. That's all we played. We woke up at like 6 in the morning, and then we played until like 8 at night, and we kept playing all through it. And yeah, we ran into crap like that all the time, man. It was, and we wouldn't know what to do, and we'd get frustrated, and then we'd just go and like try to attack each other. Once again, it's that lack of discipline that came in. So we're like, let's play a Solid Snake again on Shadow Moses. So that's pretty much what ended up on that on the Brawl into the Spectrum.
But did you ever beat it?
Yeah, we beat it. And to be honest, like, you've beat it, right? So
no, I haven't.
Oh man, the last few cutscenes, totally worth it. I'll put it that way. Like, I'm not even that huge of a Nintendo fan. But even I was, like, standing up in my seat, yeah, you know, like, waving my fist in the air.
Yeah, the princess is in another castle.
Cool! You know, like, oh yeah, it's worth it, especially the reveal of a certain character. But, yeah, man, it's definitely worth it. Keep at it. Go to, like, I thought I'd never recommend going to GameFAQs, but go to GameFAQs if you need to, because the last few cutscenes are really, really good, well done.
If you can't find the Bhutan to press.
Where's the Emmy key? I'm sorry, I just thought of that Simpsons reference.
Who's this? Yeah, that's funny.
So do you do most of your... What systems do you have, Cody? Wii...
Wii, PS2, and original Xbox, but I do most of my gaming on the Wii. But
okay.
I'll wait till the next segment to explain my thing about gaming.
Okay. Good deal. And I'll make sure we get right to it. Basically what I've been playing, for those that do not know, on Steam, they added all of the NCSoft titles, which is like Lineage 1 and 2, City of Heroes, City of Villains, and the Guild Wars trilogy.
You mean the things like City of Heroes, City of Heroes, City of Heroes, City of Villains, and City of Heroes?
Yeah. And see, what's kind of bad is I own box copies of City of Heroes and Guild Wars, and I rebought both of them on Steam.
It's Steam. Steam does that, man.
Steam does that. Not only that, what kind of made me sad is I was like, okay, while Guild Wars Trilogy is installing, I'm going to get my Guild Wars book out, and I'm going to read, you know, I'm just going to kind of read it and kind of refamiliarize myself with the lore. And I was reading through it, and then all of the NCSoft games have those little brochures that come with the games.
Right.
And I took a look at it, and I was like, hey, I'm going to look through this. And the first thing on the page is Auto Assault. The second thing on the page is Tabula Rasa. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no, this is not good, because both of those games don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
They've been decommissioned. They pulled the plug. But the rest of them are going strong, and like Guild Wars is, I played Guild Wars whenever it first came out in 2004, and that made me feel, or no, 2005. Do what?
Did it really come? Guild Wars come out then?
Yeah, it which is crazy because whenever I logged into Guild Wars, I made my new character and everything, and I was like, yeah, and it's like we're celebrating our fourth year of being a game, and I kind of looked around and I was like, oh shit, it's been 4 years? Like, oh my god.
Yeah.
It's been a long-ass time.
It's crazy to think about because I first started, I remember I went out and bought my copy of City Heroes with a friend in college, and that was 3 days after my birthday, so it was May 6th, 2004 that I started playing City of Heroes. And I guess between then and now, I think I've active time like 3 years and 2 months or something, so quite a bit of time sunk into that.
Yes, sir. I'm gonna come.
If you want my opinion, I don't particularly care for MMORPGs, but if I did have to go with one, it'd probably be good worth because you don't have to pay $15 a month.
Yeah, or,
right.
It's I hear you there, Sparkster. It's pretty easy to get burnt out on MMOs after a while. But I don't know. It's you know, you get dragged back into all this talk about City Heroes, and you know, Wes, you just bought it, is you know, kind of pulling me back into it. And
Or yeah, go ahead, Cody.
And I don't particularly, from personal experience, my brother used to be addicted to World of Warcraft, and it's like, really, is it World of Warcraft worth, you know, getting addicted to? No, I don't think so, so I won't play that game.
People, they can have some really bad problems with MMOs.
No, that's true. They're not for people with addictive personalities. Like, yeah. I think I'm kind of, I've built up an immunity, like, I almost got a vaccine, if you will.
Yeah.
Because I used to just be so cracked out on Diablo 2. I used to play it seriously so much that I got physically ill at one point because I, like, stopped worrying about time and sleep and all this other stuff. And after that, my body just kind of said, you know what, don't do that ever again. So now I just really can't get hooked. And like you brought up, Cody, it's a really good point because sometimes MMOs make you almost feel guilty. Because you're paying $15 a month, so you feel like you should be playing it. You're like, okay, I'm paying for this game on a monthly basis. I should be logging in at least 3 times a week. I mean, you have to justify the cost, you know? But with Guild Wars, once you buy it, you're done. Your characters are there forever.
Yeah.
Like, you're done. And that, plus, it's based entirely on PvP. Like, you can do PvE, and you can do kind of a big quest line and things like that. But basically, once you get to level 20, and 20 is the level cap, so they want you to get there quick, they want you to form up a guild and go into arena battles. So, I mean, it's focused mainly on skill instead of, you know, how many days played you've had, which is kind of what World of Warcraft is. You can't even get into certain places until you're attuned, which makes... that, you know, which requires that you've played the game for a certain amount of time. Like, it's based on addiction. And, yeah, I kind of have problems with that type of mentality. But, yeah, but to be completely honest, the only way to make a multiplayer game more addictive is to put it on Steam. because they add, you know, your Steam friends. They can see how long you've been playing it. You can keep up your Steam tracking, your stat up, you know, updates. I mean, they added all the stuff, and yeah, like if they needed to make something like City of Heroes or Guild Wars more addictive, they've actually added it on Steam. So thanks, Valve, for ruining my life. but that's about it. Kind of a quick first segment, but that just means we're gonna have more time for the second segment. So we're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, your listener mail. So we'll be right back, gang.
Cheeseburgers.
Beard Radio. You're kicking it old school with Brian Belita, Wes, and Cody. That's right. We're going to read some of your user questions. From what I hear, Y'all be real fine. Yeah, okay, I'm good.
What was that?
I don't know. Smooth operator.
That was like the ladies' man from SNL.
Yeah, that's nice.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back, y'all. Like, I think we should have one of those type of episodes where all we do is wear sunglasses, but they have to be the big vintage sunglasses. And we're like, welcome back, y'all.
I'll have to send you this. It's my profile photo on Facebook. I don't know if you've,
I did see it, actually. Yeah.
I'm wearing my, it's like a pair of sunglasses that my grandpa wears over his regular glasses. So they're huge. It's amazing.
You know what type of glasses I want to wear? You know, after you get like glaucoma surgery and it's like Terminator goggles. Yeah. It's like it's all black. I want to get some of those, man. Because basically that's what Soldier Boy wears. You know? It's like he just had eye surgery. But, like Brian said, welcome back. You're joining Brian, myself, and Mr. Cody Dunn, our special guest. We're going to hop right into user questions. And I'm just going to get this first one out of the way because it has to do with Battlestar Galactica. So I'm just going to brace right through it. So, I mean,
is this the one that that Exit asked?
Yes, it is. So Exit, our dear, dear friend Exit, asks, if you were a six, would you be a Natalie, a Gina, or a Caprica? And head six does not count. And I know this is probably like foreign language to half of you listening, but
and half of us on the show.
Well how would there be? I would be like, how would three people? It's like a person and a half. Like, Cody, are you half confused right now? Or
yes, I am. I don't. What?
So yeah, actually, half of the people. Okay, if I were a six model, I would be a Natalie. I would be Natalie simply because she has longer hair, and I enjoy the look. So thank you, Exit, for that completely biased, very, very niche question. All right, now we're going to get to the real questions. Awesome. I just had to answer it because it's Battlestar, and
yeah,
we're going to do a Battlestar name drop. That's been a tradition, and this is the anniversary special, so it has to be in. Like, Battlestar has to be in. And by the way, doing a quick plug, it's coming out July 28th on Blu-ray. Buy it. Everybody buy it. Just immediately. I don't care if it's $900. Go take out a Bank of America.
$900.
Bank of America loan. They're doing well, aren't they? The banking system's fine. Don't listen to the news. All right. Hopping into the next question. Our good friend Angry Linux Geek, or ALG, as we like
ALG, to
ALG for life. What is your favorite gaming company? And in regards to this, here's kind of the criteria that we're going to go off of. Quality of product, friendliness to consumers, consistency of product, transparency, product delivery, and product support as far as like patches and free DLC is concerned. And he made a stipulation. He said that Valve is kind of the easy out. So yeah. I'm going to make it a requirement. We're not allowed to say Valve.
Damn it!
We are not allowed to say Valve. That's right.
Okay, well, I'm gonna say that Valve is my number one, but we'll be talking about our number twos then, or at least my number two.
Okay, yeah, okay, true. I will admit Valve is my number one, but what, Cody, is Valve your number one?
Yes, it was. I kind of want to go on a spiel about Valve, but
okay, well, go for it. Okay, I'm gonna say special guest gets special treatment. You go on your Valve.
Okay. I have a crappy computer, so I'm trying to save up money to get a new one. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be my Steam machine. So once I get the orange box for the PC and all the games, I personally want to play Team Fortress 2 with those platformer steamers. The platformer steamers. Platformer steam people.
Real quick. I don't know. Have you bought Orange Box already, Cody?
I don't have a computer that can run it.
Okay. Well, you know what? On your current computer, I would just download Steam anyways, because your account can be put on any computer and you can download those games. But right now, and this goes to everybody out there, the Orange Box is on sale for $10.
Oh my god!
If you don't buy that, you are insane. If you don't own it already, you're already semi insane. But if you don't jump on this deal, you are, there's no hope for you.
$10.
$10.
$10. Okay. I'm going to give a breakdown of what is in the orange box for people that do not know, because for $10, that's nuts. $10 will get you Team Fortress 2 in its entirety, Portal in its entirety, Half-Life 2, Half-Life 2 Episode 1, and Half-Life 2 Episode 2, which those three put together probably, and this isn't hyperbole, probably the most important first-person shooter ever made. The only other game I can think of that could come close is maybe System Shock or like Deus Ex, as far as like pivotal, here's a monumental, like people ask, well, when is gaming going to get its Citizen Kane? I think it already has it, and it's Half-Life 2. But $10 for real?
Yeah, $10. So Cody, what I would do is I go to steampower.com, download the Steam client, and just buy it. You don't even have to download it right now, but it will be on your account and you will have bought it for $10. So
That's true. I mean, because Cody, look at it this way. My computer, it's a single core processor with like 2 gigs of RAM. I have Steam and I have about 70 games, and about 20 of those I cannot play. Like Grand Theft Auto 4, Crisis Warhead, I can't play them. They just won't run on my machine. But whenever I upgrade my computer next week, whenever I re-download those games, because once they're in your account, they're in your account. You don't have to rebuy them. They're just in your list. You can re-download them to your new machine and just play them just like you've always had that machine for your entire life.
It won't be tied to your machine, so.
Yeah, it's tied to the account, not the machine. So, good deal. But, okay, what's our number twos for our favorite company? And keep in mind, it has to be everything. It has to be the quality. It has to be the, like, friendliness, the customer support, how good of, like, DLC they have. It has to be everything.
Right. I'm going to need a second to think.
Okay, I know mine. And, you know, it actually took me a while to come up with it, because I was looking around at my games, and I was like, okay, out of all my games, what games have brought me the most, like, the most bang for my buck? Who do I respect the most as a developer? The whole nine. And since Valve was out of the question, it has to be Blizzard. And that's another one of those answers. It's like, well, yeah, everyone says Blizzard. But, man, dating back, I mean, I was a fan of Warcraft. I never played the original Warcraft, but I remember going to a Sam's Club way back in the day. Like, way back whenever I didn't know who Sam Walton was. Bought the Warcraft 2 Battle Chest, Battle.net edition, whenever they added the online mode. And I love that game so much. And then from Diablo, Diablo 2, World of Warcraft, StarCraft, just those products have given me so much joy throughout the years. And they've been really great about support. I mean, their patches are constant. Hell, they recently just patched freaking Diablo 2. Yeah, I mean, Diablo 2, you know, that's what, a decade old now? I mean, 2001, maybe? 2002? I mean, it's close to 10 years old. I mean, they just patched StarCraft, but StarCraft's so big in Korea, they're going to patch that forever. But yeah, man. I mean, Blizzard all the way. The only thing that I would say that I wish Blizzard would do a little bit differently, and they're making strides to go this route, but their transparency, and basically what that means for people that are kind of like, what the hell? What does transparency mean in form of like a game company? It's like, how open are they to their process of like, okay, here's how we make our games. Here's what we do. Here's what my job as such and such is. Here's our community. Here's, you know, trying to keep the doors open between the developer and the community. That's the only thing that I don't think Blizzard really does, because they kind of have that magic secret sauce that, no, you have to put 4 pots this and 3 pots this, but we'll never give away the family recipe. Like, they're really, you know, protective of their licenses. So that's the only thing I could see them improving on, because everything else, their consistency, they're always bang up on the product delivery. They have the new Battle.net. I mean, they're always improving, so more power to them.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. Oh, you know what? My first thought was Capcom, but they're not really that transparent. But some of the products, except for Dead Rising Wii, are kind of there's quality in the product. Like, oh, what's that? Dark Void? I can see that being good.
Yes, yeah. And to tie that back in with Battlestar Galactica, the composer is working on the music. See, it's all 6 degrees of separation, man. You can't get away from Battlestar. You just can't do it. But also, and it's funny, Cody, that you mentioned Capcom, because last episode, remember, Brian, I was saying this, with Breath of Fire 3, back in the day, like, even the 16-bit era, when you saw Capcom on the box, you knew you were getting something special. Like, yeah. You really did. And I think it has continued. I mean, they have been a bit hit and miss more lately, but that's simply because they have bigger budgets, they have more manpower, and I mean, whenever you start making more games per year, of course your ratio is going to go a little bit skewed. You're going to have a few more losses under your belt, but they have a lot more wins. I mean, Devil May Cry, freaking amazing. You know, the original Dead Rising. I mean, they just have some great product. So, that's the choice.
But as in, like, transparency, they're not very transparent with anything. I don't think they do DLC.
Well,
or...
nowadays they are. Like, they used to not be, but nowadays I think with the whole Street Fighter thing, and, oh, here's Dave Serlin, and he's doing Street Fighter HD Remix, and he's taking all your questions, and they did kind of like a used car salesman approach with it, where, like, anything you want in the game is going to be in the game. They did that, so it kind of opened that up. But, like, the DLC, yeah, their DLC is kind of hit and miss. They're starting to support it, but they're still kind of iffy on it. I mean, the Street Fighter stuff looks cool, but other than that, I mean, it seems like they focus on one game at a time. And whenever you have a huge library of games, you got to spread it out a little bit. Brian, what is it, sir? Geez. The moment of truth.
It's a tough question, because I think the only company that does all of those things that Alec mentioned, you know, quality, friendliness, consistency, transparency, product delivery, product support with DLC, is Valve. I mean, really, it's the only company that I can think of that does all of those things.
Yeah.
There are some that come close. The first one that comes to mind is Criterion with Burnout Paradise.
Oh,
The bunch of updates they've been doing to that, although... friendliness to consumers. I don't know. They still haven't put in old crash mode, so
And DJ Atomic is a jerk.
so that'd be kind of maybe the closest one that I can think of. But there are a couple that I can think of that have a couple of those things.
Yeah.
Media Molecule comes to mind. Consistency wise, I can't really say anything because they don't have a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
They did Ragdoll Kung Fu, which came out on Steam a while ago. I guess that wasn't technically Media Molecule, but it was one of the guys involved with Little Big Planet,
right.
which is the game Media Molecule made. But they've been really good about supporting Little Big Planet with updates, DLC, free DLC as well, you know, with costumes. I mean, of course, it's just aesthetic, but
right,
you know, it's fun.
Yeah,
you know, just with updates to the game, patches and stuff. That they're a really friendly company as well. I mean, just the way that, I guess, is it Mark something Lee? I don't know. Anyways, the lead guy who was there who did the Little Big Planet like graph level demo for the Sony guy was talking about all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they come to mind when thinking about at least quality, friendliness, and transparency and product delivery.
Right.
But,
And
I don't know. There's not really a company that does all those
things.
Does
all of them. That's true. And in regards to kind of picking and choosing, whenever I first saw a few of these, like quality of product, friendliness to consumers, and product support, and with the product support, in this case, it wouldn't necessarily be stuff like downloadable content and patches. It would be more on the hardware side of things, like hardware product support. But I was thinking Nintendo. Like, Nintendo...
Yeah, Nintendo.
They make great systems. Their customer support is extraordinary for a company that big. Like, I mean, I used to be a manager at GameStop, and we would deal with them on a pretty regular basis, simply because if people, you know, return their Wiis, things like that, even some of our Nintendo representatives that would come in, the company is just really well put together. I mean, they really know what their mission statement is. They know exactly how to pass off, you know, kind of their knowledge off to the consumer to help them better enjoy their product. And I remember this old story of whenever my Game Boy Advance broke, it was my not the flip top, but the old school kind of like side one. the one that didn't have, like, backlight or anything, kind of the rectangular one, the screen cracked on that. Man, I was disappointed because I was playing Golden Sun. I was really into it, and I contacted them, and I was like, listen, I bought this. I do have my receipt, but my store warranty is out. I'm a big Nintendo fan, and that was also during the time whenever I was starting to do kind of get my name out there in the freelance community. And I was like, you know, I write about games and I love Nintendo. And they're like, send it in. We'll see what we can do. And about 3 weeks later, I got back a big box. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I mean, this was about as big. Yeah, he popped out and he was dressed as Tingle and he was like, hooray. No, but, it was about as big as a shoebox. And I was like, what the hell is this? And it was from Nintendo. And I opened it up and it had a keychain. It had a t-shirt. It had a note from Nintendo support, like from Nintendo corporate, saying thank you for your ongoing support. And it had a brand new sealed Game Boy Advance.
That's pretty sweet.
And I was like, holy crap. Like, apparently they couldn't fix my older one, but right, they just boxed me up and sent me a whole brand new one free of charge.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's good, especially since, I guess back then, you know, there wasn't exactly any hard drive data on that.
Right. It was all cartridge based, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I have to give a shout out to Nintendo in that regard. But yeah, that is kind of true. There's a lot of companies that kind of fit two or three of them, but not all of them.
Yeah.
But, all right. Good question. Angry Linux Geek, thank you for that. And Brian, do you want to go ahead and read the next question?
Yeah. The next question is from platformer Sir Ultimos. And his question is, how do you guys feel about DLC? He asked, should more of it be free, less expensive, more expensive? And he also asked us, and I know this recently came up with Resident Evil 5. He asked, what about DLC that is already on the disc, but you just pay to unlock? And he also throws in a nice little comment and compliment saying that he'd love to hear our thoughts on the matter.
Good deal.
Sir Ultimus,
can I go first?
Yeah, go for it, Cody.
This is a topic I have a lot to say on, but I'll let Cody go first.
Yeah, you go for it.
Me and Squizzle are like on the same mind about this, I think. I kind of fear DLC because of the potential abuse of DLC. Like, I remember a long time ago, it was the guys from Epic saying that they could make the final boss level, a DLC, and the platformers at Chapter were ridiculing it, like, whatever, we'll just see it on YouTube, and that kind of just summarizes it, like, yeah, DLC is good, and it adds on to the game, but is it really that necessary? Can't you just put it on the disc? Can't you just get more time to put it on the disc? I don't know. DLC is one of those evils that comes in this generation that really shouldn't be that evil, but it is.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like Cody said, there definitely is there's a lot of room for abuse, and it seems a lot of companies are already taking that route, except for Valve, of course, because they're awesome.
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to think of a couple examples here. I think that the best one is, and I think I've touched on this before, but a PSP game, featuring, like, the penguin character from Disgaea, the Prinny or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
A PSP game came out featuring him, or that guy, or them, collectively. And it's like a platformer. And I think that the game shipped for, like, $40 or $30. And I think it came with maybe 8 levels. Each level probably took about, and it could be less than 8, probably took about 10 minutes to beat, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Literally about a week after the game came out, they released one level and a new boss. Like, that's what was advertised. One new level and one new boss for $4.
God.
Tell me how that math works out. Because, I don't know, I think about it way too mathematically.
Right.
You know, let's say the game was $40. I paid $40 for it. You know, 8 levels, 8 divided by, so let's say, $2 a level or whatever. No, wait. No. Man, like I said, I don't do any math. Anyways. But basically, the math just doesn't work out in my head. I mean, $4 is way too much.
That is very skewed.
And the same thing goes for, like, the Burnout Paradise cars. And I'm glad that, you know, this is, you know, again, it's just kind of aesthetics. It's an extra car. I don't need it to play the game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like a new map or anything. But I think, like, some of the new toy cars or whatever, you could buy one for, like, $2. Now, there are 80 cars in the game. I think around there.
Mm-hmm.
The game itself is, I guess, $60 if I bought it but I got it used for like 30. 80 cars, like 30 divided. I'm going to do the math right now. 30. We'll give it the benefit of the doubt. We'll say $60 for the console version divided by 80. 75 cents a car. And that's just for the cars. That's saying that, let's say, I bought a game for $60 and all it was a bunch of models of cars.
Right.
I mean, that's completely ignoring the fact that it's a huge map and level. So, I've said this before, but the DLC pricing structure really needs to be reevaluated. It needs to be fixed for,
yeah.
And they'll sell a lot more if they do. I mean, if a car was like 99 cents, I mean, it's the same thing I mentioned about iPhone apps. You know, that's impulse buy.
Yeah.
You know, but the second it goes above that, it's like, I started thinking about it. So, mm-hmm. So DLC, more of it should... I'm all for free DLC, and that will certainly get people to become loyal and happy customers to a company, which is one of the reasons Valve is doing so well, because they've offered so many free patches and huge updates. And they just get a whole loyal, you know, user base.
Mm-hmm.
So DLC, it's an iffy topic. There's too much room for abuse, and I mean, it's great to support the game, but like Cody said, I'm kind of in the impression that, you know, hey, you know, could this have just been put on the disc? It doesn't seem like games ship complete anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's very true, and I think you both hit on kind of the main thing I wanted to hit on, which is if it's used responsibly, more power to them.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But whenever you get into your horse armor or buying bullets for your Godfather gun or, you know, some of that stuff, ridiculous. Like, absolutely absurd. However, yeah. I actually want to come out and say that I enjoy the prospect of downloadable content. Like, the idea of it is something that I really do like. I know a lot of people are just completely opposed to it, and for good reasons. I mean, Cody brought out probably the best one, which is that stuff should be on the disc. And for all intents and purposes, you're absolutely correct. But what we're looking at now, I think there's two main examples. One of them is a console game, and one of them is actually a PC game. Mm-hmm. The console game is Fallout 3. There's so much downloadable content coming out for it that It's almost an entirely different game now. Like, they've added, what, 3 downloadable content? Like, entire story arcs. There was The Pit, there was Anchorage, and then there's, what's the new one coming out?
I'm not sure.
There's
Las Vegas?
Las Vegas is the Obsidian. Been... Yeah, that's the new Obsidian project. But yeah, there's a third one coming out. I know for a fact. But they're coming so quickly, they are small chunks of data. So it's not like they were already done with it, but it does make you wonder. In the PC game on the side of things, and this is where it gets really interesting, because this is, in my opinion, where we can see probably the best improvement of downloadable content and where we can see it really expand. Is in micro expansion packs, and that's Sins of a Solar Empire.
I was thinking about that when you said micro expansion pack.
Yeah, that's for $10. It's an entire expansion pack. So think of it seriously as like for $10, you would get World of Warcraft: The Burning Crusade, or you would get, well, that's kind of skewed because there's not as much content in the Sins of a Solar Empire expansion, but it's price cheap, it adds tons of new units, tons of new storylines, it's a full expansion pack. but it's priced as downloadable content. And I think that's a responsible way to use it. Of course, not everyone can be Stardock. Not everyone's that independent and, you know, running on that low of cash. I mean, they're not running low on funds. They just have a small budget to work with is what I'm trying to say. But I think something like that is very interesting. I know Valkyria Chronicles just had downloadable content. And what is it, like $5? Or five or seven.
Something like that, yeah.
But it added a lot of maps, added an entirely new game mode. I mean, that's kind of the same thing. That's well worth it. Everyone in, you know, Valkyria Chronicles fans are eating it up. It's been a huge success for Sega. And, I mean, rightly so, they should be rewarded. Because that's how you use downloadable content. But, yeah, this bullcrap about, hey, spend $4 and you get a new costume for Chun-Li. And now she looks like a nurse. Like, that's retarded, and I don't want any of that in my game. Like, no, I don't want any of it.
That's what I was going to say. That they need to either make it a really meaty, substantial update, and they can price it the way things are priced right now, or it needs to be fucking 99-cent bullshit impulse buy stuff.
Right
now, though, the majority of the stuff falls in the middle ground, which is terrible.
Yeah.
But at the same time, never mind. The pricing is messed up, but... as a side for DLC, it is a great way to support a company that you like and to support a product that you like.
Very true.
Especially for stuff, you know, it may just be aesthetic, but, you know, hey, you know, you may want it, and it's a great way to, you know, send some money their way. So it's great, especially for little kind of independent companies and for a lot of these kind of little just all digital download games like on the PSN and Xbox Live.
Right.
Arcade and whatnot.
And
so like with Pain, the PSN game where you fling a guy around like a rag doll and basically cause as much damage as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game was like $10 and it came with one map and that was worth $10. I mean, that map has a lot of replay value. You know, say that they've released like some characters for like $1. Their pricing is all right. And I think their new, like maps and levels are $4 or $5. But it's worth it. I mean, there's a ton of replay value in there. I mean, there's substantial maps, and on top of that, it's a great way to support the company.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
They will then develop more content. So.
Yeah, and that's a win-win. And another kind of interesting thing about downloadable content, it seems like downloadable content could be the answer that the console developers are looking for in regards to, well, World of Warcraft's making a lot of money per month. How can we get on that bandwagon without charging $15 a month?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that way they have kind of a self, you know, or a perpetual income source.
Yeah.
That way, and, you know, in that regard, I think it'll work. I think that it's a very good creative way. But yeah, I think, like all of us have touched on, it has to be worth it. I mean, no horse armor.
Exactly. They want to make, you know, the kind of money that Blizzard's making because they charge $15 a month, but they, you know, it's not an MMO.
Yeah.
It's easy. Make the download substantial.
Exactly.
And people will buy it. Will buy it.
I do have to give a shout out to Bethesda, though, the people that made Oblivion, because for their April Fool's joke, they had a sale on the marketplace, either PlayStation Network or the Xbox Live marketplace. You could get all their downloadable content, like Shivering Isles and Knights of the Nine and stuff, for like half off, but they charge double for horse armor. And that made me laugh out loud. Like, that was the most well-played thing. I think they realized that they screwed up. So, yeah. And now that they're having a sense of humor about it, more power to them.
I'd be interested to see the sales numbers on that. I bet some people did just buy it, like, fuck it, I gotta buy it now.
Yeah, I was tempted. But paying double for something that useless, no. Like, my morals got the better of me. Okay, but good stuff, guys. Yeah. That was good.
Good stuff.
That was a great question. Thank you so much.
It's a touchy topic.
And, yeah, we could spend a whole podcast on it, but it's good stuff, definitely. And we're going to move right on to, once again, Mr. Marco Strider. He was on the last episode, and he's a good friend of the show and a great all-around guy. And speaking of, since he's scratching our back, I'm going to scratch his real quick. Marco Strider is part of a pretty kick-ass team. You may be interested in them, Mr. Brian Belita. They are part of a martial arts trick team.
Oh, is this that loop kicks thing?
Yes, it is. Loop kicks. People should just, right now, just go into Google and type in loop kicks. That's L-O-O-P-K-I-C-K-S. And what it is it's a pretty freaking amazing, if I do say so myself, martial arts group. They're kind of like, you know how like old breakdancers in the 80s had teams? Like, hey, we have teams of b-boys. This is teams of martial arts tricksters. And basically what that means, think of the power and the velocity and like the form of martial arts. So they're using real martial arts, like capoeira and, you know, taekwondo, things like that, with the agility of gymnastics and the presentation of breakdancing.
Yeah.
The most badass stuff.
A lot of like tricking and flipping, but it's neat because they'll throw in, you know, they'll do a backflip to a, you know, like 720 spin with a heel kick.
Yeah. And this isn't one of those, hey, we're doing it on a trampoline. No. They're in the middle of like a parking lot. It's the most incredible, like, if you watch, they have videos on YouTube. I mean, they're a huge success. They go around the world. The more I was looking into it, I mean, you know, I've talked with Marco Strider off the air before, and, you know, he is an awesome guy, and he kind of passively mentioned that he was part of Loop Kicks. And then I looked it up, and I was blown away. Absolutely blown away. But, you know, I just thought it'd be nice, since he kind of scratched our back a little bit, give him a quick shout-out. But, yeah, definitely Google Loop Kicks. Give them a look-see, and I think you'll like it. But let's go on to his questions. Yeah, absolutely. His first question, he actually has, let's see, he has three questions for us this week. The first question is focused towards me, but then I'm going to kind of open it up a little bit, and we'll kind of discuss it. Wes, are you planning on going to the Screw Attack Gaming Convention? And that's July 3rd through the 5th in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. And also, if so, what activities would you be interested in checking out? Unfortunately, this year, I'm saying no to all conventions because I have to save up some money for med school. So doing that, saving up the bank account, getting it kind of padded a little bit. But that means next year I'm going all out. I want to go to PAX. I want to go to the Screw Attack. I want to go to all these places. But I did look through the Screw Attack Gaming Convention, kind of the event list they have. And there was four seminars that I would be super interested in going to. And the first one is called Careers in Gaming Other Than Design. I just think that's kind of interesting because everyone wants to be a game designer. Like, you go to school, you see the dumb commercials on TV. I want to go to whatever. I want to go to...
Tighten up the graphics on level 3.
Yeah, I want to design video games. It's like, you can't start off as a designer. Like, you just... That's not how it works anymore. You back in the days of, like, Warren Spector and, you know... freaking David Jaffe and stuff like, yeah, you could, you know, Tim Schafer. If you had an idea and you got some people together, you could be a designer. But I just think that seminar would be a realistic way for people to understand how to get into the industry. Kind of, you know, hey, let's talk to the graphic designer. Hey, let's talk to the product analysis guy. Let's talk to the community manager. You know, they're in the thick of it. They're working on the same projects that the game designers are. They're talking with the game designers on a daily freaking basis. But... You know, and they're an integral part of the process, but they're not game designers. You know, they're doing their specific trade in that company. So I think that's a more realistic way to approach it. And I think once people realize that, you know, hey, let me go to school. Let me go to, you know, Votech. Let me go somewhere. Let me get a trade degree. Let me go in and let me be a programmer. Let me be a graphic designer. You know, go in with that mentality and you're going to be more successful. Yeah. The second one. And I think this would probably be the one that I would be the biggest fan of, is a question and answer session with Jack Thompson. and see, because this could go one of two ways. Like, I know it may turn into a train wreck. Like,
I am 99% sure it's going to turn into a session of people trolling him.
Yeah, it kind of. But part of me doesn't want that.
It's just sad. Yeah,
I wouldn't want that. I would want to seriously go up and not even ask him about violence in video games. I don't even want to talk about that. I want to just ask him general questions, seriously, about, okay, your exposure to the medium. Like, do you have any relatives that play games? Like, do you know personally any gamers? I mean, and not even tie it in with, well, you're ignorant for saying such and such. I don't even want to go into that. I want to find out what his background is, where, like, how he started approaching coming into the gaming industry. And whether or not you agree with what he says or not, it is interesting to see where he's coming from. And I kind of want to dig in a little bit. I would want to kind of ask him a few things like, hey, why are you coming at it with this mindset? And what else, you know, what else, what other kind of exposure have you had to the medium? But yeah, that seems like it could be really good or really bad.
Yeah.
Considering, but, okay. And then, one just kind of for the shits and giggles of it that I'd want to go to is a seminar called How to Become a Pro Gamer. And people would think, well, you got to play video games and you got to be really good at them. Yeah, that's part of it, but it's kind of the same thing as, you know, how do you become an actor? Well, you go act in people's movies. Like, no, there's more to it. You have to have a manager, you have to have an agent, you have to, you know.
You have connections.
Exactly. I would like to know the networking side of it. Like, okay, how would you become a pro gamer? Like, if you woke up one day, hey, I'm pretty good at Company of Heroes. I want to go pro. What would you have to do? Who would you have to contact? How would you have to get sponsored? Like, the whole nine. I'd want to know all of it. Just to know. And then the last one I'd be really, really interested in is actually an OC Remix discussion. And some of the artists that are on OC Remix, which is basically, doesn't it stand for Overclocked? OC?
Yeah.
Overclocked Remix. Basically, they take old retro video game songs, or newer songs, it could be, and they do remakes, whether it be like techno remakes or heavy metal remakes. But OC Remix is an awesome site. And the discussion is basically a panel with about three or four different people of the composers and the artists on it.
That's pretty awesome.
So it kind of picked their brain a little bit and see what they're up to. But I do kind of want to open this up. What gaming conventions would you guys be interested in going to? And why is there an appeal there? Like, why would you want to go to the convention? And, you know, which one would probably be your favorite to want to go to?
I would love to go to a LAN party. Just to see how many sweaty nerds there are. just to count how many girls there are. Because, you know, for a girl that must be like, oh, there's so many guys there, ew.
Covered in testosterone. That's right. No, that's true. And, you know, the girls there would just be like sponsors for, like, hey, we're giving away free t-shirts for Red Bull. Like, you just know that's how it would be, you know, or like, yeah. Hee-hee, we have t-shirts that says balls on it. Tee. You know, and... but Brett... But, Brian, which one do you think you would like to traverse to?
I don't know. I haven't really been to any... I haven't been to any gaming conventions. I mean, the Platformers is really the first kind of community that I've been on. I kind of lurked Penny Arcade for a while. But I'd definitely interested in going... to kind of any of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I guess Penny Arcade Expo, just because I like what the Penny Arcade guys do, and they usually have some pretty unique stuff. But the reason I go is mainly just because I'd mainly be going for the people. Like, if, you know, if you guys were going so I can meet you guys, mm-hmm. You know, just some of the people that I feel I have a little bit more of a connection with on the forums, like Jan Turiu, Ether I know in real life, you know. I don't want to keep naming people because then people are going to be like, "What about me?"
But right, it gets into the whole.
But I mainly go just because it's something to do, mm-hmm. and you know, to meet the people.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's not really anything that goes on in those conventions that I couldn't find out like on the news online or something.
Yeah, but, that's,
you know,
true.
It's something to be said for actually just taking a weekend and be like, yeah, I'm fucking going somewhere. You know, I'm getting away, getting out of the house, flying to Seattle or something. So, yeah. Although I probably won't do that just because of price and stuff, but I'll more than likely be going to the East Coast PAX whenever that shows up.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one looks like that's 2010, right? That's next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. The Eve of Air 2011. But yeah, it looks really cool. Yeah, and I think it is safe to say that the conventions are great, not necessarily because of the panels, even though, you know, in regards to the Screw Attack one, the panels look great, but yeah. It is the people, and there's nothing to kind of, you know, reaffirm your love of a hobby than being around other people that love the hobby. That's where you really meet the passionate people. That's where you really start making your connections. And, yeah, it's just all about the people, man. But yeah,
and if I can, you know, kick someone's butt in Bloody Roar playing with my feet while I'm there, then you know, okay, I'm down with that.
Oh, of course, absolutely. But
next question.
And okay, good stuff. And Marcus Strider asked his second question. relating to your segment in episode 9 about the future of Japanese role-playing games, do you guys think something like White Knight Chronicles is a step in the right direction? And just kind of a brief overview of what we talked about in episode 9, besides my ranting about Final Fantasy X and how it was racist. Basically, what we talked about was Japanese role-playing games, even though they're traditional, and even though they've kind of followed the same staple and stigma for the years and years, almost decades now, there has to be growth. That has to grow. It has to expand. It has to become something new, or else it's going to die. Like, Japanese role-playing games will die out if they keep on the same trend that they're on. And White Knight Chronicles looks to mix things up a bit. I was familiar enough with the name of it, but I didn't really look too much into it until earlier today. Whenever I got the question, I kind of researched it, and I would say yes. it does have a few of the things that I do like to see. Basically, you pick your actions in your battle before the battle begins. If that doesn't, you know, throw you for a loop, I don't know what does, but that's kind of a way to, you know, it's more like playing chess in that regard. Okay, I know I'm going against this kind of opponent. I know these attacks will be useful, but what order should I do them in? You know, and then based on your positioning on the map, it changes your strategy and it changes, you know, your accuracy. So it mixes some strategy elements, but I do think that it's a proper way to go. And like we mentioned before, Valkyria Chronicles is also a great, you know, showcase in where the Japanese role-playing game segment could go. Like, yeah, that's a good direction for it to go because it keeps with the general storytelling conventions, but it spices up the battle mechanics enough to keep things interesting.
Yeah. I think it's a step in the right direction. And if only for the fact that all the characters aren't Matrix Japanese supermodel Olympic level gymnasts.
They're mercenaries. But
they might be. I don't know.
The settings and stuff. The settings are one thing that I've always loved about Japanese role-playing games because they're always so varied. I think the changes have to be on the internal game part of it more so than the aesthetic. Good question. And that kind of actually leads pretty well into the next question by Marco Strider. What is everyone's thoughts on the upcoming Final Fantasy PSP game, Dissidia? Anyone planning on picking it up? And I know last episode I went off on a tangent about, oh, it's ridiculous that they're flying through the air and they're super uppercutting people and they get fireballs and they're shooting a 12-barrel shotgun. And, you know, I went kind of off on that. But I will say that in the context of a fighting game, it works incredibly well. Like, the fights look exciting. You can fight, I want to do Jekt versus Sephiroth, and I want to do Kane versus Kefka, and I want to do such a, you know, it's kind of a fantasy wish fulfillment for fans, but, you know, some fan service there. But it does look interesting enough to warrant a playthrough, absolutely. So I may be picking it up. I may wait for it to drop in price a little bit, because I'm not a big enough Final Fantasy fan anymore to pick it up on day one. But it does look interesting. I mean, fighting mechanics, it looks kind of Power Stone-ish in a way, to where, you know, you're flying through the air and you can use, you know, verticality plus, you know, the horizontal nature of fighting games to your advantage. So, looks pretty cool.
Ooh, can I answer?
Go for it.
Breaking news, I don't give a shit.
And why is that? Is it just because it's overplayed or just...
Final Fantasy, I just don't like Final Fantasy at all. Just the old Final, I can respect the old Final Fantasies, but the Final Fantasies on PSX pissed me off so bad.
Really?
Random Encounters, oh my god, fuck that game. No, sorry, I won't do that shit. JRPG I actually like, I'm sorry to get off on this tangent, is Fire Emblem. And it makes sense. It all of it, this look, it's humble. Everything about it is just, it's not this big old production. It makes sense. I don't know how to explain how I feel about it, but it just, it's realistic. I just, magic is realistic, I guess. If magic was realistic.
For Fire Emblem, is what you said?
Fire Emblem.
Okay.
I played Sacred Stones.
Okay. Yeah, I have very kind of limited plays with Fire Emblem, but I do know what you're meaning by it. It's more humble, it's more kind of scaled back a little bit. It's more about the people involved instead of some big grandiose. The stories do seem that they could get there, like, oh, well, you have to save the kingdom. But then it has to deal with the people more so. And since it's based completely on strategy, whenever one of your characters dies, they're dead. They're done. Like, nope, you can't get them back. Yeah. You can't revive them. They're done. You messed up, and now you have to deal with the consequences. Like, there is something pretty, pretty fantastic about that. But Brian, what are your thoughts on Dissidia?
I don't really have a whole lot to say about it. I don't know. I haven't really been following it, so it didn't really not something that particularly interests me. I mean, I play Final Fantasy, used to play RPGs, mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't know. I might check it out if it gets some good reviews, but otherwise, it's not really on my radar.
All right. And Brian, do you want to go ahead and read the next question?
Yeah. This is a question from my boy Yan Chu Ryu.
Absolutely.
My Canadian counterpart, I might say. And so his question is, as Relic and Blizzard are basically the two mainstream RTS developers, do you believe they are equal in terms of quality, support, innovation, and playability? And he wants to know, what thoughts do we have on the rivalry fans of each developer have with each other? So, people who like Relic and people who like Blizzard, what they have to talk shit about each other.
See, I can... You know how the DLC question was pretty meaty before?
Yeah.
Like, I could get into this one
crazy. I can't particularly get into it because I don't play a lot of RTSs. They're not really my thing for the most part. I know some things here and there. I'll let you start off, Wes.
Okay. I'm a huge Company of Heroes fan. And I will say, just starting off, that I think Company of Heroes is the best RTS ever made.
That's Relic, right?
That is Relic Studios, correct.
Okay.
However, Blizzard is the most famous for their RTS games, which is StarCraft, WarCraft, and that's it. But that's all you need. I mean, StarCraft and WarCraft rule the world, essentially. We kind of touched on previously in this episode, I mean, Korea's national sport besides Taekwondo is StarCraft.
Like, I'll have to say, my friend showed me a video, and this shows how much StarCraft has permeated, but there was a stand-up comedian doing, like, bits on StarCraft in Hong Kong, in Korea.
Right. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, they have professional announcers, they have marketing and stuff from, like, McDonald's. I mean, it's huge, man. But with Blizzard and Relic, there is a rivalry nowadays, especially since StarCraft II is coming down the pipe and Relic with the Dawn of War series. And basically, the kind of rivalry started because, for people that don't know, the rivalry started because Warhammer created a universe with Space Marines and, this kind of alien sentient race called the Tyranids. And, Blizzard wanted to make a Warhammer game. They wanted to get the license for Warhammer and make a strategy game. And the Games Workshop, the company that owns Warhammer, told them no. And said, you're not allowed to use this license, you're not allowed to use it. And Blizzard basically took their ball and said, fine, I'm going home. And whenever they left, they made StarCraft. And StarCraft has Space Marines and a alien species called the Zerg that are identical to the Tyranids, like, verbatim. If you look at a picture of a Tyranid and look at a picture of Zerg, they're identical.
That's funny.
And guess what? StarCraft got more successful. So now there's this ongoing debate. It's like, well, yeah, sure, Warhammer was first, but StarCraft's the better game. And it's more the fan base talking about the technicalities of the franchises, more so than the actual game mechanics. But I don't really have a personal preference. I do think that Company of Heroes is the best strategy game I've ever played, period, because it deals more with situational analysis, and you have to be really quick on your feet because you know, a lot, like I've said many, many times before, you know, if you're in a building and you're taking cover, someone can come with a tank and just blow out the building. So guess what? You don't have any cover anymore. With stuff like Warcraft and Starcraft, you cannot do that. So there's a whole different realm of strategy whenever you're playing the Relic games. But I just think the whole fan club mentality of, well, fucking Blizzard should shut up and keep making their kiddie games because Warhammer is the true emperor of blah, blah, blah. Like, no.
I'm gonna sum this up in really quickly. This is kind of my creed. And imagine I'm saying this in italics.
Okay.
Internet.
Yeah. No, that's well said. Well said.
And I don't know, for my house view, from a guy who doesn't really play RTSs, they both seem like they're really good games. I've heard great things about both. So, you know, if you want to play one, play one. If you want to play both, then reap the benefits of both.
There you go. Pretty easy. And
Yeah. My thing is, I kind of like, I played the original Dawn of War about a year ago, and I kind of like it more than StarCraft because you can just, when if you lose units, you can press that plus sign and make more units of the same kind.
Right, your reinforcements, yeah.
Reinforcements, and that's kind of cool, but my heart goes to StarCraft 2. StarCraft.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to StarCraft 2?
Like the price rape? No.
The price gouging. That is true. I mean, we're still kind of... yeah, it's broken up, but still, I'm still stoked for StarCraft 2, man. Because I mean, once we get our good computers, Cody, that's what's gonna happen. Like we're gonna reap the benefits of amazing Blizzard games. So, and also, there's a second part to the question, and I'll go ahead and read that one. He breaks up very bluntly, but that's why we love him. Question number two is, how bullshit was the Escapist Magazine Best Developer poll, which Turbine won? Super bullshit or mega bullshit? For those that don't know.
I'm going to go with super mega bullshit. And we were talking about this before we started this. I was like, Turbine? I haven't even heard of them. And if I have, it apparently didn't stick with me.
Right. And for those that don't know, the Escapist Magazine, they did have a poll of 8 developers, was it? That, I believe 8 developers that were in the best developer, ever poll.
Let's see, it was...
Listen to these heavy hitters.
Yeah, it's Turbine, Valve, Nintendo, Squeenix, Relic, Harmonix, BioWare, and Rockstar.
Like, basically, that's the Illuminati. Like, that's... You know what I'm saying? Like, those are the people that rule... But Turbine? Like, Turbine shouldn't even be in there.
Yeah, what did they make? You had to refresh my memory. Is it just Lord of the Rings Online?
That's their most popular one. I mean, that's... Or Turbine may make... did they make Warhammer Online?
Let's see. Lord of the Rings Online and Dungeons & Dragons Online.
Oh, okay.
That's...
Is that it?
The two things. Asheron's Call, and that's it.
Oh, well, Asheron's Call is a classic. Like, I will give them credit where it's due. Like, that game has been around forever, and it has a huge following. But that's probably... This just screamed of a popularity contest. Like, Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to... The thing that gets me is the very first round was Turbine versus Valve.
Yeah, and fucking Valve lost.
And Turbine won.
Okay, yeah, sure. No, that doesn't happen in reality. but this just screams of a popularity contest of someone going on the forums and saying, hey, we're part of a best developer poll, go vote. And since Asheron's Call has a bazillion players, that's probably why it won. I mean, they do make quality product. I'm not knocking Lord of the Rings Online. I played it once it came out, played it for like 4 or 5 months, had a blast with it, a lot of fun, good game. They're not going to beat Blizzard. They're not going to beat Relic. They're not going to beat Valve. No. No. Just no. It's super mega colossal bullshit.
These things are dumb.
All right. Well, thank you, Jan, for the two awesome questions. Moving on, Behemoth asks, what is the best roguelike?
Diablo.
Diablo? Would Diablo be considered a roguelike? Like,
well, no.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking NetHack. I'm sorry. I was thinking what was the best.
Yeah, first off, for anyone that doesn't know, a roguelike is basically an extremely punishing game. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I got it right, that the kind of defining factor for roguelike making, for a game being a roguelike, is that you can die, and that's it. You can spend 14 hours playing, get up to level 20, have, you know, if it's like an RPG type game, you know, have a super awesome sword, super awesome armor, and if you get just clusterfucked by four ogres and you're dead, that's it.
Whoa.
There's no going back.
Whoa.
You start over with a new character. Your character is dead. You lose all those 14 hours. And that's kind of the appeal as well as the punishment of it. And as I've mentioned, I've been playing Spelunky, which it's a roguelike combined with like a platformer.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, cause the way it works is that you kind of work your way down through these caverns,
mm-hmm.
and each level is procedurally generated. And that's kind of how it works with most roguelikes.
Okay, that makes sense.
You play ability. And, you know, let's say I've gone through and in Spelunky and I've, you know, jumped across a chasm and, you know, I've done all this stuff, gotten down to the ninth level, and I just made it to the third area, which is this ice area. And if I get blown it, that's it. Mm-hmm. I got to start over from the beginning. There's no save points, no checkpoints. That's it.
Man.
So as for a real answer to the question, I haven't really played a lot, but right now the best roguelike is Spelunky, hands down.
good choice. I'm not too familiar with the genre, like entirely as much as I didn't even know what kind of defined a roguelike until Brian just explained it. Thank you. But in that regard, I'm wondering if the DS game Etrian Odyssey would be considered a roguelike.
I believe it is, and it's funny you should mention that, because I know Yan Truyu played that, and the second one, I guess there was a second one that came out, and mm-hmm. he really liked those. And yeah, I'm pretty sure those it's a roguelike. I think your main character might not be able to die, but I'm
your party members.
99% sure that like your partners and party members can be
right. That's the only one I've ever played, so I'm gonna say that one. Etrian Odyssey. Because I know you can like make your own map. You can.
Yeah.
I mean, that has some really cool mechanics, and it's a very specific style of game. So I mean, but it was a lot of fun the very limited time I had with it. Yeah. But it was actually my friend's copy that I got to borrow for about two nights and played it. Yeah. It was hard as balls. Like, not gonna lie, very very tough.
Usually they go hand in hand with dungeon crawlers, so that they roguelikes more than likely tend to be kind of a top down RPG type game. But that's not to say that they can't be anything else, as Spelunky is a good example.
Right. Good deal.
Cody, you got any...
Cody, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry, my short attention span led me astray. I don't know, man. I'm sorry, I just...
That's right.
Oh, that's
I'm not into the roguelike. The only thing that resembles roguelike is, like, Diablo, and that's... Only thing I like. That's about it.
Right. And that does kind of constitute somewhat. I mean, especially like Diablo 2, if you're playing on the hardcore hell ladder, once you die, you're done. Like, your character's deleted. It's...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can definitely see a few comparisons in the way the game's put together. But, all right, we're down to the last question, gentlemen.
Yeah, we got the final. One more question from my East Coast brother, Yard Gnome.
Yes, sir. And Yard Gnome asks, how do you feel about the oversaturation of the music game market? I'm glad we saved this one for last, because I could talk at great length.
Do go ahead, because I have no opinion about this. The only music game I'm interested in is Guitar Hero 3.
Okay. That's a good choice, by the way. Very good choice. Probably the best Guitar Hero ever made. People say World Tour, and I will disagree with them very... very, very much. But in regards to the music game market, like, Brian, do you want to go first? Because mine, I'm going to go off on one of my crazy
tangents. Yeah, sure, why not? I don't mind more music games. I mean, I love them. I love rhythm games. for me, I think it peaked with Amplitude and Frequency. Just because those were great packages. I mean, they were, there was, you know, varying difficulty that was perfect. But mainly it was really the soundtrack that they chose. And they were really kind of unique tunes, mostly bands you've never heard about or remixes and collaborations between bands that you know.
Right.
The soundtrack was great. And so, that's kind of where the music game market peaked for me. As for the oversaturation now, it does seem like everybody's kind of hopping on the, ooh, a rock band, Guitar Hero bandwagon. And for me, it's the peripherals that kill it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just so many, but, I don't really know if there's an oversaturation, if I'm reading you right, and that you mean there's just a lot of music games coming in right now. I don't know. I don't mind them. As long as they're unique. I mean, the good ones will kind of rise to the top. And, you know, the shitty generic ones will sink to the bottom.
Yeah, that is true. But the way I read the question, I think oversaturation of the music game market, I mean, technically it does mean how many of that specific product is on the market. But almost the oversaturation is kind of the mindset. Like, I actually think it's so played out already. I want it to be done with. I don't want to see another Guitar Hero. I don't want to see another rock band. I don't want to see any of it. I kind of agree with you. I want to go back to Amplitude, Frequency, much more. Even Rez, I would consider a music game. More games styled and structured that it's about the music instead of about freaking pattern recognition. You know, I'm a musician myself. And nothing pisses me off more, like absolutely pisses me off more than people that, oh man, I can five star whatever on Guitar Hero and I can do all this and, but what, learn it on real guitar? Hell no, are you crazy? Drives me up a wall. Like the amount of time that you spent recognizing and seeing all these notes going up and down the screen. You could have learned that song on a real instrument five times over. Like, learning an instrument is not hard. It is not a difficult prospect. It takes patience. And I guess that's something that the game market doesn't cater to. Because there's a new one every other week. And hey, this one's made by Lego. And this one has 40 other people on it. You can be Steven Tyler in this one. Like, I don't care. I don't give a shit about the music game.
Yeah, that's... I'd equate the current kind of music game market with the sports game market, NHL, Madden, anything, and that, like, every year they feel like they have to release a fucking new one. And, you know, it makes them dull, and as you said, it makes people sick of them.
Yeah.
To some extent, I'm sure there's some people who fucking buy every one.
Well, yeah, but exactly.
For me, it's basically like, you know, oh, hey, it's a new Madden game. Who fucking cares?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have not booted up a single copy of a music game in, a year and a half, I'd say.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't appeal to me anymore. I don't know if I've outgrown it. I don't know if I focus my music creativity somewhere else. Like, oh, but in Guitar Hero, they put a music creator mode. Like, no, I don't care. I'll create real music. Thanks. Just, I know it kind of sounds a holier-than-thou opinion, but I just can't stand focusing all this time and energy on learning a fake instrument. On a fake instrument. I just don't, it pisses me off. It makes me mad.
It's like I said, for me, it's really the peripherals that kill it. I mean, they're fun, you know, but it's not something I, you know, spend, what, $150 on or whatever to get everything that you need.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know.
Let me use a good old-fashioned controller.
There you go. Use the Nintendo Power Glove. All right, guys. This is, I think the show's about a wrap. We've come to the end of the questions.
Questions. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, those were fantastic questions. And that was our episode number 10 of Nitro Beard, our double-digit anniversary.
But
join us next week. We're going to do a big PC gaming podcast next week. We know that for a fact. We're going to be planning quite a bit of it in advance. So if you want to know about PC gaming, or if you're just getting into it, or you know what games you want to buy, or you want to catch up on what we've been playing as far as PC games go, tune in to us next week. But as far as this week is concerned, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me. I am Wes Gardner, and thank you, Mr. Brian Belita. It's a pleasure as usual.
All right.
And thank you so much, Mr. Cody Dunn, for being a special guest today.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have been great, and this has been another episode of Nitro Beard that is a wrap.
If you want to.